we will continue our look at basic capital allowances computations by looking at when allowances should be given. When a trader acquires plant and machinery for use in his trade, he will receive capital allowances in the accounting period in which the expenditure is incurred. The normal rule is that expenditure is incurred for capital allowances purposes on the date on which the obligation to pay becomes unconditional. The obligation to pay normally becomes unconditional on the date a contract is signed to purchase the plant and machinery. Therefore, in most cases, expenditure is incurred when the contract is signed. There is an exception to the general rule. If there is a gap of more than 4 months between the date on which the obligation to pay becomes unconditional and the date on which payment is required to be made, the expenditure is not incurred until the date on which payment is required to be made. If some of the expenditure is required to be paid more than 4 months after the date on which the obligation to pay becomes unconditional, and some is not, we must split the expenditure and allocate it to separate accounting periods. Let's illustrate this. Jacob is a trader with a 31st of March year end. He buys a new machine costing £100,000 for use in his trade. Under the terms of the contract, he has to pay £75,000 1 month after delivery of the machine, and the balance of £25,000 5 months after that. He signs a contract to purchase the machine on the 10th of March 2010, and his obligation to pay becomes unconditional then. He takes delivery of the machine on the 21st of March 2010. He is therefore legally required to pay £75,000 on the 21st of April 2010 and £25,000 on the 21st of September 2010. We need to consider when the expenditure is incurred, as this will dictate in which accounting periods Jacob can claim capital allowances. Jacob draws accounts to the 31st of March. The contract was signed on the 10th of March 2010. So the obligation to pay becomes unconditional on that date. £75,000 was paid on the 21st of April. The first payment is due 4 months or less after his obligation to pay becomes unconditional. So the £75,000 is deemed to have been incurred on the 10th of March 2010. This is important here, because this means that the £75,000 is treated as a capital allowance addition in the year ended 31st of March 2010. The balance of £25,000 is paid on the 21st of September 2010. This payment is more than 4 months after the obligation to pay. Therefore, Jacob incurs expenditure for capital allowances purposes of £25,000 on the 21st of September 2010. Therefore, this £25,000 is a plant and machinery addition in the year ended 31st of March 2011. Turning now to hire purchase agreements and leasing. Expenditure on an asset acquired under a hire purchase contract is incurred at the time when the asset is brought into use. This is despite the fact that payment for the asset may be spread over several months or even several years. The 4 month rule does not apply to hire purchase agreements. Note that when an asset is acquired under a hire purchase agreement, legal ownership of the asset transfers to the buyer at the date the agreement is signed. Capital allowances can therefore be claimed. Contrast this with a short leasing agreement, either an operating lease or a finance lease, whereby a trader is borrowing an asset from someone else. Here, capital allowances are not available, as the trader does not legally own the asset. Instead, relief is given for the leasing costs via the profit and loss account. However, if the lease agreement is a long funding lease agreement, as described earlier when we looked at common adjustments to profit, capital allowances are available to the lessee. We will look at these allowances in detail in a later session. Capital allowances are not given automatically, They must be claimed within the trader's individual self-assessment return or via the corporation tax return for a company. A claim can be made at any time until the time limit for the amendment of the return, i.e. by the 31st of January 2013 for a 2010-11 return. There is no requirement for a trader to claim all of the capital allowances due to him. In some instances, it may be beneficial for a trader to disclaim some or all of his capital allowances. This may be advantageous where a trader has low profits, which may be covered by his personal allowances for the year. If a trader disclaims capital allowances, this will lead to a higher tax written down value being carried forward, which will, in turn, lead to higher capital allowances claims in future years. For example, Paul is a self-employed window cleaner. He draws accounts to the 31st of March. The tax written down value of the general pool at the 1st of April 2010 was £5,000. On the 21st of June 2010, he bought new ladders costing £1,000. His tax adjusted profits for the year ended 31st of March 2011 are £5,200. He has no other income. The capital allowances computation will be as follows. The tax written down value of the general pool at the 1st of April 2010 was £5,000. Additions in the period are £1,000, giving a balance of £6,000. The capital allowances rate is 20%, giving writing down allowances of £1,200. The tax written down value to be carried forward is £4,800. Paul's 2010-11 trading income is therefore the adjusted profit of £5,200 less capital allowances of £1,200, giving trading income of £4,000. This is covered by his personal allowances for 2010-11, so no tax is payable. Instead, Paul could disclaim his capital allowances. The capital allowances computation would now be as follows. The tax written down value of the general pool at the 1st of April 2010 was £5,000. Additions in the period are £1,000, giving a balance of £6,000. Paul will disclaim his capital allowances to give a tax written down value to be carried forward of £6,000. Paul's 2010-11 trading income is therefore the adjusted profit of £5,200 less capital allowances of nil, giving trading income of £5,200. This is again covered by his personal allowances for 2010-11, so no tax is payable. However, Paul now has a higher tax written down value to carry forward to 2011-12. We will finish this session with a couple of examples. The tax written down value brought forward at the 1st of October 2009 is £8,000. Additions in the period are £2,000. Andy sold his old ladders for £200, so we deduct this from the pool to give a balance of £9,800. Claiming a 20% writing down allowance gives £1,960. Lynette's first accounting period runs from the 1st of May 2010 to the 31st of December 2010, being 8 months. This is a short accounting period, so we will have to scale down the capital allowance rates. The machinery bought as the trade commences goes into the general pool. Lynette signed a contract to buy a cutting machine on the 1st of November 2010. This date is therefore the date that expenditure is incurred for capital allowances purposes. Lynette paid 50%, i.e. £7,000, on the 20th of November 2010 and the remaining £7,000 on the 1st of February 2011. Even though Lynette spent the remaining £7,000 after her accounts year end, as there is less than 4 months between the date of signing the contract and the date the next payment was due, the second payment of £7,000 is treated as incurred on the 1st of November 2010, and therefore is eligible for capital allowances in the first accounting period. The first accounting period is only 8 months long. Therefore, the rate of writing down allowances is 20% multiplied by 8/12. This gives capital allowances for the period of £3,200. That concludes this initial lecture on basic capital allowances computations. We will move on to more advanced computations in the next session.